5, chapter 6. Chapter is entitled The Activities of Lord Rishabhdev. This is text number 13. So the the Sanskrit is a little different here. Tasyanuganan. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Tasyanu ganan slokar gayanti. Aho bhuva sapta samudra vatya. Dipeshu varse swadi punya etan. Gayanti yatratya janad murare. Karmani bhadrana vitha vavanti. Learned scholars chant about the transcendental qualities of Lord Rishabhdev in this way. Quote, oh, this earthly planet contains seven seas and many islands and lands, of which Bhartvarsha is considered the most pious. People of Bhartvarsha are accustomed to glorifying the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his incarnations as Lord Rishabhdev and others. All these activities are very auspicious for the welfare of humanity. Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Abharate bhumite hoilo janma jaraya janme sartaka kari karapak upakara. As stated in this verse, Bhartvarsha is a most pious land. The followers of Vedic literature understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his different incarnations, and they are privileged to glorify the Lord by following the instructions of the Vedic literature. After realizing the glories of human life, such people should take up the mission to spread the importance of human life throughout the whole world. This is the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The word adipunyam indicates that there are certainly many other pious men throughout the world, but the people of Bhartvarsha are even more pious. Therefore, they are fit to spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world for the benefit of all human society. Srila Madhvacharya also recognizes the land of Bhartvarsha. Visesad Bharate Punyam. Throughout the world, there is no question of bhakti, bhagava bhakti, or devotional service, but the people of Bhartvarsha can easily understand devotional service to the Lord. Thus, in every inhabitant of Bhartvarsha can perfect his life by discharging bhagava bhakti and then preaching this cult throughout the world for the benefit of everyone. Gyan timidandasya gyana jina salakaya chaksu. Now this is a explanation or a statement glorifying the people of Bhartvarsha. And of course, the point is that out of all the incarnations of the Lord who have come to this earth planet, we can't even count how many have come to this land of Bhartvarsha. Of course, when we speak of Bhartvarsha in this context, it refers to India. But again, once the whole world was known as Bhartvarsha. So, but here, the context is that this island known as India, where practically uncountable incarnations of the Lord have appeared on this land more than any other place throughout the world. And this is understood by intelligent persons, persons who are non-envious. So therefore, there is something special about this land. Actually, in this same section in Srimad Bhagavatam, it explains that birth in the higher planets is considered to be a very, you know, glorious birth. But to take birth in Varsi, India, is considered even to be more higher than taking birth on the higher planets. Because on the higher planets, it's practically impossible to go back home, back to Godhead. It's possible. And we see that persons who are on the higher planets, who are actually concerned about their spiritual welfare, Srila Prabhupada said they take birth in ISKCON. He said they're lining up to take birth in our ISKCON movement, the demigods, so they can have an opportunity to take part in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement and therefore reach the goal of life. This is Karmasthan, and this is the place where one can go up or down. In the higher planets, you're there, but you go down generally. After your pious activities are exhausted, Prabhupada uses the example just like an airplane. It's flying through the sky, and then it has so much fuel, and then it just runs out of fuel. And then it comes down again to this lower planet, Earth planet. So that is the situation in the higher planets. Actually, birth in the higher planets is considered by those who have tasted the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be like some kind of imagination or some kind of hallucination. The example is Akash Pushpayate, a sky flower, something that is non-existent. They also use the example of the horse's eggs. A horse does not have eggs. But the statement is there. Flowers don't grow in the sky, but the statement is there to say that the glories of the higher planets, as understood by those who have tasted the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is just compared to these things. It really has no basis in reality. In fact, Prabodhananda Saraswati says that he calls it Akasha Pushpayate, sky flower, and he also calls liberation, freedom from all material suffering. He calls that worse than hell. He calls it hell, Narakate. And of course, if you study the general population who take up spiritual life, they're practically trying for these two things, liberation and a better material situation. That is the majority of people who take up some type of spiritual practice. Generally, they want liberation. I remember I went to one symposium where there was a group of religious leaders and from different backgrounds. Most of them were coming from the Christian background. There are the various types of Christian denominations, and of course, there were others, Judaism, and there was, I believe, also there was a Buddhist, and myself. There was about eight of us, and we were all expected to give a presentation on our philosophy. So I was listening, and basically everyone was explaining that their goal and their process is to get salvation, to be freed from suffering, to get salvation from this material. But devotees don't even want even salvation. Prabhupada says salvation, liberation, it's already included in the process of devotional service. When one takes up the process of devotional service, because devotional service is situated on the transcendental platform, one is already liberated. We should know that. That as long as you're engaged in devotional service, you're on the liberative platform. What is that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, 14:26? Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatitai tam brahma bhutya. What is the last one? Kalpate? Brahma bhutya kalpate. So this explains that one who is fully engaged in devotional service is already on the transcendental platform. But as long as one stays in devotional service and executes the process, gradually one will come to that platform. So we're not so much interested in what we call the perks. Liberation, freedom from material suffering, material happiness, all these things. Srila, what's it? What is his name? Lila Sukha, Bhuva Mangala Thakur. He says, liberation and material happiness, which is really the aspirations of everyone who is taking up some type of spiritual plasm, he says, they're standing at my door with folded hands, just begging to offer me some service. They come. They're a byproduct of devotional service. The devotional service is the ultimate. And here it explains that one who takes birth in the land of Bharatvarsha has the best opportunity to fulfill the goal of life. It's a good birth. At least it was. It's changing slightly now. We don't know. Still, it's a good birth. It always will be a good birth. But the land, of course, we see now that people are chasing the toys of the West and becoming absorbed in materialism. So instead of following the path of their ancestors, they're creating the path of of the, what we say, the gross materialist, to try to find some kind of satisfaction in something temporary. And it's quite abominable. When you it's interesting to see this. Because if you go to the West, in the Western countries, you see people, they're very expert, and it's very natural to be a materialist there. It's like they can do it closing their eyes, blindfolded, walking backwards. It's expert. They're dhaka when it comes to performing material activities. So expert, so first class, pakka. Come to India and you watch the same attempt. It looks kind of funny, you know, because it just doesn't fit. It's not the nature of those who take birth in this land to seriously try to eke out some kind of material arrangement through sense gratification. It looks really funny. It looks odd. Actually, Prabhupada said that. He said, India's material advancement is artificial. That was the exact statement he used. India's material advancement is artificial because they're not meant to keep that mood. Now, this verse here, Bharate Bhumite Hoila Manasu Janma Ya Janma Sartaka Kari Kara Pa Upakara. This is a verse. It says here that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted this. Now, this explains that to take birth in this land, you have a debt. Of course, everyone takes birth with debt, but there's a special debt here. The debt is that one must fulfill the goal of life and then take that, what we say, that benefit and give it to others. This verse, outside of one other verse, is quoted more by Srila Prabhupada than any other verse. The only other verse he quoted more was Sarva Dharma Parikshajam Mamekam. This verse is quoted second in all of Srila Prabhupada's lectures and all his appearances in so many different ways. He quoted this verse because he understood the importance of this verse. He says, everyone who takes birth in this land must make their life perfect. It's a responsibility. It's not something, it's called part of one's heritage. Just like if you take birth in a certain situation, and there's some family tradition there, there's some cultural heritage, and you more or less adopt that as part of being part of the family. Well, here, Bharatvarsha is the big spiritual family that is given a special responsibility, and that is to become Krishna conscious and make others also Krishna conscious. Prabhupada said, there is one Indian who is doing it. He was referring to himself. He says, there's one who has taken up this mission seriously, referring to himself. So, it's a great responsibility for one who is given much, much is expected, and one who is given little, little is expected. So to take the birth here is a very high birth from the spiritual categories. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, 21st chapter, 31st verse, there's a nice purport Prabhupada explains about different classes of devotees. In that purport, he explains that the third class devotee is one who just simply comes to the temple, worships the Lord, worships the spiritual master. And he doesn't preach. Nor is he concerned about the welfare of others. Prabhupada goes on to explain that in this verse, the verse actually explains that it's spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to Kardama Muni. And he explained, to show compassion to all living entities, actually you will attain me. This is the way to attain me, by showing compassion to all living entities. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains that the duties of a sannyasi and the duties of a grihastha, of course he says the sannyasi must go from village to village, town to town, from city to city, and preach. And he must visit those who are engaged in materialistic activities such as the grihasthas, and he must enlighten them with transcendental knowledge. But then he goes on to explain that also those who are in the grihastha ashram that are initiated by one in the renounced order, they must also take up this mission and spread Krishna consciousness at home. He said they can invite their friends and relatives, and they can hold classes in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures. And in this way, one can fulfill one's duty as in a household, the ashram, by being an instrument for preaching Lord Chaitanya's message. And pretty much the purport explains that if one doesn't do that, they remain on the third class platform. And of course, Srila Prabhupada explains that ISKCON is based on the second class platform. This movement is established four things. One, worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their object of devotion, makes friends with other Vaishnavas, develops friendly relations with others, shows compassion to the innocent, and avoids the atheistic non-devotees, those who are against devotional service. So we find throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam there are so many purports where Prabhupada emphasizes the importance of becoming an instrument for spreading Lord Chaitanya's movement. And it says here in the purport, he quotes Madhvacharya, practically throughout the world there is no question of Bhagavad Bhakti. Wherever you go throughout the world, people have a very a hodgepodge conception of spiritual life. There's very true understanding of what is pure devotional service. Pure devotional service, as explained by Srila Rupa Goswami, is very rare. Even those who practice the process of pure devotional service is pretty rare. As His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was explaining in his class the other day, how generally religious principles gravitate down to two things, and that is that people worship the Lord for something material. I know when I stay in the West, we have our temples, and we have large Indian congregations, and people come in, and they get their darshan from the Lord, they put some money in a box, they offer some prayers, and then they go. And this is the majority of the persons. They're generally praying for something material. Give me dehi, dehi, dehi. Always approaching the Lord for something material. And you study some of the other traditions in their prayers. They're asking for material things, even in the prayers. Even in spiritual life within the Vedic culture, we find, I remember I went to one yogi, one ashram, and they were chanting the names of Shiva and Durga and so many things. And at the end they were just, please give me wealth and please give me a nice home. And that was the end. And it was in English, so I could understand, you know. I mean, you know, go to work. And you can go to work and get these things. You don't have to ask God for it. If you're destined to get it, you'll get it. Yeah, so the spiritual life has gravitated down to more or less just a pious type of material life, where they just people that just looking for something. But here, real spiritual life means to engage in pure devotional service and become an instrument for others. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that there is no one more dear to me than one who preaches this message of Krishna consciousness. And he says there will be no one more dear. Sometimes devotees get this misconception, well, what can I do? I'm not, you know, I may be situated in my ashram, I have my service. Does that mean I have to give it up and just travel around or study slokas? No, really. The idea is that to develop the mood of compassion. That is really the idea. To make oneself an instrument according to one's service for the benefit of others. It's a mood of devotional service that one does their service as a means of preaching. Whatever it is, whether it's cooking, whether it's cleaning, whether it's worshiping the deity, one does it in that mood as a means to attract the attention of the Lord through that devotional expression and to inspire others. When you come into a temple, when the temple is so clean, people will actually appreciate the cleanliness of a temple, especially in the West. And this is one of the biggest ways to preach in the West, to have clean temples. Really. I remember I was running a preaching center in many years ago, back in 1987, 88. This was in a town called Cincinnati, Ohio. And so I would just spend a good part of the day, a couple hours a day, just cleaning the whole temple from top to bottom. And when people would come in the evening, we would have evening programs. There would always be, of course not every day, but occasionally there would be remarks, oh, this place is so clean, so nice. It's so nice to be here, the atmosphere. So that's preaching. That's preaching. It attracts a person's mind to the atmosphere of temple life. The deities are decorated so nicely. One takes darshan and one's heart and mind becomes attracted. That's preaching. To take time to speak to others about Krishna consciousness or just to develop some friendly relationship, that's preaching. There's one story where Radhanath Maharaj tells this story. I like this story. It's an interesting story. About there was one temple in Europe back in the time when Srila Prabhupada was here. And so generally in our movement, everyone is quite young. There was no one, I mean in those days, if there was someone in their 30s, that was quite rare. If they were in their 30s. Everyone was in their late teens and 20s. It was a very young movement. And Prabhupada was dealing with more. So one time, one more elderly lady, I think she was in her 40s, she came to the temple. And she actually liked the temple. She liked the devotees. But she was very much attached to dressing in a certain way. She would have very fancy hairdo. And she would wear all kinds of mini skirts and wasn't the best attire for temple life. So the devotees were quite disturbed with her appearance. So they started off by instructing her that we want you to come and it's very nice, but please do not dress like that. It's not proper. But she was attached. She couldn't give it up. But she still liked to come. So she continued to come the way she was. And the devotees started getting heavier with her and really strong. Finally, it became so much, she said, "The devotees don't want me to come. I'm not coming anymore." So she stopped coming. And then just a few days after, when she stopped coming, Prabhupada was scheduled to come. She said, "Oh, their Guru Maharaj is coming, so let me come and see and meet their Guru." So Prabhupada came, it was a Sunday program, and he sat down on his Vyasasan, and she walked in just after Prabhupada had taken his seat. And she came the same way. Same way, you know, fancy hairdo, all kinds of makeup, and, you know, devotees were kind of nervous. And Prabhupada, he saw her come in, and he welcomed her. He said, "Oh, thank you for coming. You look so nice today." He actually complimented her. She was so happy. Her heart just melted. She sat down. She listened to Prabhupada's lecture. That night, she went home, took off all her makeup and let her hair down, dressed differently. She came back to the temple. She said, "Oh, your guru is so nice." She said, "If this is what pleases him, then I'll do it." He probably never asked her to do that, but she felt that this was going to would please Prabhupada, so she took her hair down. So, you know, whatever the devotees were trying to do with their heavy preaching, and just was working the opposite way. But Prabhupada was just so kind. So this feature of kindness, of course, here devotees are always very kind. Not only kind, but they're actually caring. But a lot of our temples, if a guest comes walking in, everybody looks around. Well, I'm busy. I got something else to do. Well, we actually have fear in your heart. Oh, no, I have to stop my service. I can't do that. Yeah, I'm serious. And where's the person who's supposed to meet all the guests? Go find him. He's not around. Oh, no, what are we going to do? You talk to him. No, I know you talk to him. He's not my type to talk to. You know, you talk. Serious. I mean, this was a regular affair in a place called New Vrindavan. So it would go on like that. People would be afraid to talk to the guests. Sometimes they'd be wandering around, just looking around. Is there anybody around? Yeah, so this element of kindness is actually a feature of the Vaishnava's qualities, to take some time for others. And so that's also preaching. So, but whatever way one can situate themselves in their Krishna consciousness to be an instrument for helping others, that is actually the success in life. Janani Vas was quoting this verse, or this statement that I quote all the time. It's a statement by Prabhupada. He says there's two types of devotees. Those who are concerned with themselves, their own spiritual advancement, and those who are concerned with others. Of course, being concerned with oneself means to be serious in executing one's the process of devotional service. But as one becomes more and more, when we say, fixed in their devotional service, one starts to understand that it's not enough just to be happy in my own Krishna consciousness. It's not enough. Actually, one cannot maintain that if they continue. We are not Bhajananandis, we are Ghostanandis. The two types of devotees, those who are only considered conscious of their own bhajan, and those who are concerned with spreading the message of Lord Chaitanya. So that's there. And sometimes it takes a little encouragement, a little courage to start making some effort to approach others, to preach, to make arrangements, to have programs. But it's actually quite easy. That is, Prabhupada said, the number one duty of a householder is to give in charity. And what is the best charity? It's nice to give Lakshmi, and that is always appreciated. But the best charity is actually to be charitable to those who are in need. The famous Mother Teresa. She used to, of course, she was here in Bengal, in Calcutta. She would minister to the homeless, to the poor, to the sick, to the hungry. And so she was known as giving her time, her care, her spiritual teachings to the poor. And one person, he was complimenting her, "You're helping so many poor people." She said, "Actually, these people that I see who are sitting here, these people are not poor. Many of them have God within their heart. But when I go to the Western world and I see these big, big, important people who have big, big, you know, material arrangements," she says that when I see them, they're actually poor. They're poor in heart. Their hearts are suffering. They're lonely. She actually said that. They're lonely. She said that is the real poverty, poverty of the heart. External poverty is, of course, it's not a very desirable thing, but the real poverty is the poverty of not having the opportunity to engage in devotional service. So we see two of the illustrious brahmacharis from here have made their journey to the Western world to try to save the more fallen souls of the Western countries. They says the farther west you go, the more fallen the population is, and that's a fact. That's a scriptural statement. But somehow or other, if you go far enough west, you also come back to where you start. So if India continues to go the way the west is, they'll be the farthest west soon. With all this enthusiasm for material life, it's quite sad to see this. As I travel throughout Bombay, I think of Prabhupada's statement about new crows and old crows, how a crow is very much attached to garbage. And the old crows, they've been doing it for so long, so when they go onto the garbage, they just sit there, and once in a while they peck at it. They're quite relaxed. They're absorbed in the garbage, and they know what it's all about. And they do it quite naturally. But the new crows, they're just jumping and bouncing from item to item and having great happiness and ecstasy and experimenting with different types of garbage. And so this is what's happening now in this land of Bhardvarsha. People are so much enthusiastic for materialistic life. But it's the same old stuff. It's birth, death, disease, and old age. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. It's the same old stuff. One may need to make some arrangements in order to keep body and soul together, but material things are not the source of happiness. A material thing is neutral. When you're Krishna conscious, then whatever you have materially is happy. If you're not Krishna conscious, whatever you have materially will bring you more and more entrenched in the material energy. So Prabhupada is encouraging here, and throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, and especially in Chaitanya Charitamrita, this same verse has been emphasized over and over, that one who's born in the land of Vardvarsha must seriously take up this process of Krishna consciousness and make their life an example to others. He says, we are not pickpockets. Prabhupada used the example of pickpocket. This Krishna conscious movement, we are not pickpockets. A pickpocket is one who's trying to get something, trying to give something. And the world is in dire need. We can see how much, just by what you hear, how the standard of material life is becoming more and more degraded. I mean, the degradation. Violence now is very, very strong, especially in Western countries. Very, very violent. In America alone, the crime rate is so high. It's so high. And of course, in Western countries, and even in Europe, the crime rate is very high. Personal violence, extended violence, suicides. In America, the World Health Organization says that every day, 1,200 people attempt suicide. This is the most materially affluent country in the world. 1,200 persons every day attempt suicide in America. One-tenth are successful. That means 1 out of 10. That means approximately 120 people every, and this is the wealthiest and most affluent country in the world. They have everything that's desirable and more. So just by that example, without that spiritual foundation, there's no real happiness. And so it says that a devotee, when he sees others suffering, he also feels some pain. And when he sees others feeling happy, he also feels happy. So that's the nature of a devotee. Devotee's concerned about others. So that's what it means to be a preacher, to develop some... And if Prabhupada hadn't did what he did, and there was times in Prabhupada's stay here in America. He was thinking, well, I came, I tried, nothing worked. This was the first year. He had no success, actually little, very little success. He was meeting a few old ladies and giving a few talks here and there. No one was really coming. He was living in different places. Prabhupada used to go down to the docks where they would keep the ships, and he would check out the schedule of the ships departing for India. He would do that regularly. And one time one of the men who was working there, he was noticing the same man is coming every day and he's checking the schedules of the departures. But he's never buying any ticket. So he asked Prabhupada, "You coming every, but you never seem to buy any." Prabhupada said, "Yes, I'm just seeing what is going on." In other words, Prabhupada didn't really say anything to the man, but he was explained that really he wasn't intending to go, but his heart wanted to go back. He wanted to go back to India. But Prabhupada said, when he was sitting in his room later on in Boston, I think it was Boston or Los Angeles, he was sitting with some senior devotees. He said, "You remember how I was living in my Radha Damodar temple? I had my little room there, and it was so nice, it was so simple. I was in the land of Vrindavan. How happy I was, do you remember?" And he was saying to his devotees. But then he stopped, he reflected, he said, "But for me to go back there would be sense gratification." He said that, for me to go, because it's a personal desire. For me to go back there, it's sense gratification. So preaching and it's an austerity. But Krishna is pleased by that type of austerity. So according to one's position, one can make themselves an instrument. I was just in Mayapur. We were with Jai Pataka Maharaj. We were going through the award ceremony. And one night was congregational night, going through the different congregational preaching programs throughout the world. And it's amazing to see how many devotees are starting to become, how many people are actually becoming devotees through congregational preaching, especially in the West. Yes. Our temples in the West are, unfortunately, due to some undisclosed or unrecognizable reason, it's a mystery. We can't seem to increase our devotees nor maintain what we have. But outside, the preaching is going on in the congregation. And more people are becoming devotees in their homes, chanting 16 rounds, following the principles, reading the books, and visiting the temples. And it's growing quite tremendously, especially in a lot of European and also in a few countries that are within the Muslim world also. And in America too. In our temple in Chicago, we have something like 9-10 Bhaktivedanta programs a week where people from the congregation are having programs. So it's growing in that area. And so something is happening. But anybody can do that. Anybody, any grihastha can just have a program. Just call your friends and once a week just talk about Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, have prasadam, definitely have kirtan, and just invite people to come. And gradually you'll see, if you remain steady at it, gradually serious people will start to come. You know, in the West, they have these things called yoga centers now. Yoga centers. Where, you know what they do? They have kirtan night. These are like they're a hodgepodge of everything. There's like hatha yoga, reiki, and, you know, this, some yogi comes in and this, everybody comes in and talks about this philosophy or that. But they have kirtan night. And they charge. They charge you $10 to go to a kirtan. Serious. And it's big. People come. And, wow, kirtan night. And they pay $10. And just like a few blocks away, there's the Hare Krishna temple. And it's free, you know. People come. But, you know, people are willing to pay $10. But we're not really doing enough kirtan, especially in our Western. We're not. We're just, you know, we go through our motions in our temples and have a little class here, have a little prasadam, and everything goes on nice, and pay the bills and have a few festivals here and there, but nothing changes. Preaching mood is lost, especially in America. There's something there. There's some desire to regain it, but it's very low. But that is actually the responsibility of everyone in Krishna consciousness, is to be an instrument to spread Krishna consciousness. Nowadays, the Devamrita Swami, when he was here, he's saying, you know, the biggest impersonalists in the Western countries now are Westerners. You know, the Indian yogis and tapasis have been coming for so many years, and they planted their seeds of impersonalism. And now some serious Westerners are actually becoming impersonalists. There's one man, and his name is Krishna Das. Big, he's big. I mean, he gets, you know, thousands of followers if he does a public thing. He's a Westerner. He just preaches all kinds. You know, you can worship this deity, you can worship this, you chant this mantra, you do this, you do some yoga, and then you become God. It's really big. But they're just cheating people. It's cheating people. There's a lot in the name of cheating. So much goes on. We have something genuine. And if we're sincere and we're determined, serious, intelligent people will take up Krishna consciousness. Actually, the world is looking for something. Serious people are looking for something. Of course, here in Radha Gopinath Temple, you're doing it. I mean, there's so much going on here. I was just in Gopal's Gardens yesterday. I had spent one of the nicest days that I can remember in India. I spent 4 hours in Gopal's Garden, myself and Jananivas Prabhu and Yadavar Prabhu. And we were just going from classroom to classroom. We met every kid in the whole school. We went to every classroom, from the lowest standard up to the highest. We went to the art room, we went to the game room, we went to the lab room, we went to the library. We met, it was just so nice to see how someone who was seriously trying to preach Krishna consciousness to those, what we say, devotees who are just take birth in our movement, who are just developing, how effective it's becoming. These kids are really, really, really amazing. They're chanting their slokas, they're singing their songs, they're very, very, they're developing really good Krishna consciousness habits. It's a well-organized program. If you get a chance, go to Gopal Gardens. You'll be very happy you did. You'll see something quite extraordinary. The kids are there. And it's, they actually inspire you in your own devotional service. So this is preaching. Prabhupada wanted that, and he wanted preaching on all levels. And here it's being done. I remember in the old days when Prabhupada was there, he would give us different, he would always be giving more and more preaching programs. So the devotees would think, well, Prabhupada's giving us something different, so we should stop this and work on it. Prabhupada said, no, you just increase. And Prabhupada was always pushing more, 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 more. Because he knew the Western mentality is that there's a lot of energy and there's a lot of a feeling to do something. So he was using those propensities to spread Krishna consciousness more and more. So there's no limit to Krishna consciousness. So that's what it means to actually to be a member of ISKCON. It actually means to take up Lord Chaitanya's mood of devotion and to be an instrument for others. Okay. So, questions? Comments? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.